What's up, everybody? I'm Imran Khan. I'm your host of Kinda Funny Games Daily. And joining me today, I am privileged and honored to have Suriel Vasquez here.
Hello.
Woo!
That's the most applause I've ever gotten in my life.
Hopefully that's only a start. Suriel, if you do not know, is one of the, I guess, Game Informer 7 is what we're calling it?
GI 7.
Depends on who you mean by who and we, but yeah.
I mean, that's the name I've decided to adopt.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So Suriel was a former associate editor at Game Informer. He was our fighting games expert.
Yeah.
Yeah. Greg invited two GI people over this week. So for my first hosting duty, to help me take the heat off me, Suriel and JV have decided to join. JV, by the way, is over here on the shock mic, so he's off camera.
Hi, everyone.
Which we've quickly discovered is not actually a joke. The shock mic is a real thing that shocks.
Yeah, the shock isn't because it's like surprising or anything.
It's not a fun word.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, don't touch it and metal at the same time, apparently.
Some people like it.
Yeah, if that's your thing, I'm not judging.
Yeah.
You can say that about anything, though. Like, some people like it.
I'm just saying, it feels pretty good.
Live your bliss.
That's what I read online.
Yeah. This is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv Kinda Funny Games. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames or listen later on the podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write into silver members or get the show ad-free. Suriel, I'm actually I'm really glad you're here. I'm not kidding when I say you were here to help take the heat off me. This is actually my first hosting gig. I probably fucked up so much of that.
It's fine.
The thing about
podcast remember is that as long as like you don't break the actual like recording equipment, there's really no way you can totally mess up on a podcast unless, you know, you say something really terrible, but like, it's fine. People forgive a lot.
You say that, but like, now that you've said that, we're going to break something and we're going to have a heated gamer moment, I'm sure.
That's true. I mean, yeah. We are covering one, so.
Yes. Today's stories include, we're covering the Nintendo Direct today. We are covering the Ikumi Nakamura leaving Bethesda. And we are also covering a heated gamer moment, as Suriel just said. But before we start, there was a segment on the GI show.
Mm-hmm.
That you pioneered, you revolutionized.
I mentioned once, yeah.
Yeah. You're going to have to help me with the name, because it is a...
I don't know the name off the top of my head, because I didn't make it up.
I should have asked Ben Hansen to tell me the name. I asked him permission.
It's on a different show, so we're going to have to rebrand it now.
Okay. So, on the GI show, you would, as an expert in cereal, since your name is cereal, that qualifies
that's how that
you as expert.
Yeah.
You would try various gaming cereals.
Mm-hmm. Various, we did that segment twice, to be fair.
It was the Mario cereal, and what was the other one?
It was we did the Cuphead cereal, I think, and then one other one.
I think it was the Pac-Man one.
Yeah, the Pac-Man one.
There were plans for the Lucios that we got derailed, I guess.
Yeah.
But you're not working there anymore.
Yeah, I like the idea that there's just like, oh, we can't do the Lucio's ones. It was just like the setup required. And then like they did it on this week's show. They just had someone eat that cereal. It's not a big thing to set up, by the way.
So I figured that since that was such a big part of your life, that cereal segment.
I thought about cereal constantly while I was at the show. How can I better monetize our cereal related content?
I went to Safeway last night to buy Lucio's specifically for this segment.
Wait, what's a Safeway?
Safeway is the, I don't know if it's a local grocery chain. I've never seen it until I came to California.
It's all over California, though. I think.
Okay. It's all over California.
It's like a Cub Foods. It's like a No Frills, right?
Foods.
Cub Foods? I've literally.
That's the thing we have in Minnesota and Nebraska, respectively, is like similar grocery stores.
Huh.
I'm just yanking your chain about local grocery stores. I saw one on the way here. I know what a Safeway is.
Good.
This was a bit.
Oh, okay.
Fucking got
it! I got. Okay. Speaking of bits and speaking of No Frills, I couldn't actually find Lucio's. Turns out, not every store carries them. So, what I did is I got something vaguely gaming related, because I think this thing looks like Spyro. Right?
Yeah, I can see it.
It's the same species.
Yeah, it's a dragon. I wanted to like paste the word Spyro on top, but I forgot.
Okay. I mean, it's video game related in that it is a special edition called Signature Select Berry Crackles. This is the special edition. You get all the pre-order bonuses. It has the season pass. So if you're in the grocery, if you're at the Safeway and you're looking for Berry Crackles, definitely get the Signature Select Edition.
Right. So I bought spoons and bowls. One of those bowls has a hair on it, so we're not going to use it.
You expense those, right?
No.
Okay.
I don't have a job.
All right.
Just give us the receipt.
Sure. I will absolutely do that then. Brought all that stuff. On my phone, it says, because in my Google search on Safari, it says, what's the difference between buttermilk and regular milk?
There's a huge difference.
Why'd you get buttermilk?
Because I wanted something small so I could carry it. Also, I'm lactose intolerant, so I can't use any of this afterwards.
I don't know how any of this milk stuff works.
So I gave you the option of drinking this apparently sour milk. By the way, I didn't care.
How
what
do you know?
Okay,
so it's like straight up expired?
No, it's not expired. No. It's just a more sour milk.
Oh, then yeah, that's fine. I'll take that. I just thought it was like sour to me usually means expired.
No. This is not going to kill you.
Okay. Well, we're experimenting with the brand here on this segment.
Plus, we're expensing it, so I don't care if you use it or not. Like, yeah.
My health is really irrelevant at this point.
Do you go cereal first or milk first?
Oh, cereal first.
Okay.
How do you know how much milk to put in it if you haven't poured the cereal in
there? Some people are psychos.
Yeah, that's really the way to describe the other side of this argument.
Yeah.
Okay, that's about it.
So we're going to say this is Spyro branded cereal.
But it's not. Just
It's not.
So Sony don't come after us.
Legally distinct from Spyro. Okay. Spyro cereal would actually be pretty good.
So
you call it Spyro's. Like, Yeah.
Okay. Do we want the crunch on the mic? Is that?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, definitely. Don't get any milk on there, though. That's a good crunch.
Okay. So the cereal is basically like Cap'n Crunch with berries.
Okay.
That's not really what I want to talk about. I was not prepared for how sour that milk was going to be. Like the sour milk just completely overwhelmed the entire cereal at that point, and that was wild. I don't know what to do about that flavor. Okay. So
that sucks ass. Yeah. Whoa.
So I feel like this, whatever scientific metrics you have about like, oh yeah, we have to evaluate this based on an objective scale, just went out the window when you introduced this one variable. I don't recommend using buttermilk with cereal.
Yeah, no. That's awful.
Yeah, but the cereal is just like what you expect. It's like off-brand Captain Crunch with berries in it. It's not, it's fine.
So we ruined cereal and milk just for ourselves forever.
Yeah, for content.
I'm glad I've become lactose intolerant because I could not drink milk after that.
Milk is great, but that's not good milk.
All right, well that's sitting there for now eternity. Yeah. I think I'm gonna leave that in the fridge, and just when Greg comes back, I'll just put the word Greg on there, and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do a little bit of housekeeping now that we've done this awful, awful thing. It's Thursday. That means there's a new party mode on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. This week, Chloe Dykstra and Cameron Cuff join the boys and get super irritated in a game of Ultimate Chicken Horse. That was the game at the interwebsite tournament that no one knew how to play for some reason, even though it's amazing.
So good.
Speaking of games that no one has played, Friday night, Greg and Fran are hosting the Borderlands 3 launch party from Dallas. Watch with the best friends on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Thank you to our Patreon producers this week at Retro Games, Blackjack, and Mohammed Mohammed. Today we're brought to you by Third Love and Raycon, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. I was waiting for you to finish. We got four stories today.
A baker's dozen! Yeah, I don't stop until you tell me how many stories.
At some point, it was just intellectual curiosity of how long it would go.
Oh, I'll keep going.
Yeah.
I've gone for a long time.
So let's start with, I feel like the biggest news today is there was a direct yesterday. This report was from me because I'm addicted to compiling news, I guess.
Yeah.
So I did this all last night. Let's start with the beginning of the Direct opened with Overwatch, which had been rumored for a while.
Yeah, there was that leak of the
case.
The Kate carrying case.
Yeah, and they just opened straight up with it like, hey, Overwatch is on Switch now. Mm-hmm. Are you going to play Overwatch on Switch?
I mean, I have it on PC, so probably not. It's not like it's not a go-to game when you're like, oh, I'll play this, you know, on this like terrible Wi-Fi wherever I happen to be. I can't imagine you can play it anywhere else. I'd be curious to see if they add any sort of single player mode that kind of justifies you playing it offline of like, hey, we have this one sort of throwaway single player thing where if you're on a bus, I guess you can play this instead of an actual match.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, it's not the version for me, obviously, but it's cool. It's one of those things where when you think about games that should be on Switch, Overwatch is on that list for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's $40, so it's not that bad, right?
So I don't know. You can run into kindoffunny.com/you're wrong if I'm wrong about this, but I didn't think they said anything about crossplay.
Yeah.
So it would be you'd just be playing with people on Switch, which I'm sure is not going to be a minuscule number. But Overwatch came out in 2016, if I recall correctly, which predates a Switch, so obviously it wouldn't have come out on Switch then. But does the game feel too old at this point?
I mean, I think for a lot of people, this is not the version that they're going to play. I think that if Blizzard had gotten cross-save into the game at some point, I think this would be a lot more appealing for me personally because I have Overwatch on every other platform it's on because to play with different people. But none of those, like, hey, if I got like a cool skin on one platform, I don't have it on any of the other ones. So I basically stuck to PC. And then the other platforms were like, I guess I have to play it on this platform with my friends. So, but if I had all my stuff could transfer to the Switch version, I'd be a little bit into the idea of playing more Overwatch. But as it stands, it's one of those things where it's like, I'd have to start over, basically.
Yeah.
Which is not super great for a game where it has so much content at this point. So I would love for them to do like a Destiny style, hey, carry all your stuff over. We're going to do an account migration thing.
What actually amazes me is because like there's no crossplay, there's no, like you do have to start over and start all that stuff and like it's all locked to the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just do Nintendo stuff for it?
Yeah.
Like, why is there not a Mario costume for May?
Yeah, like Link for Tracer or whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense. And they did it with Diablo.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they want to keep it consistent. They don't want people to be like, oh, I wish I had this thing and it's not on PC. Yeah. But at the same time, you want to sell this thing too.
Yeah, Bowser Roadhog, all you need.
Yeah, all that makes complete sense that they're not doing. What they are doing, however, is releasing it on October 15th, which kind of cements October as the third party month because I think like that's Witcher as well.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no real Nintendo releases between like beginning of October and Luigi's Mansion at the very end.
Yeah.
So I guess they are trying. Nintendo does that sometimes. They clear out space for third parties, and this time there actually is like some third party releases.
Yeah, that's that is definitely like a Nintendo like solution of like, how do we get third parties to put games on our console? Besides the fact that it's like one of the most popular things going right now, it's like, oh, we'll give them a whole month on the calendar. Is that how third party relationship works?
Yeah. Like there was that time when Wii came out, and like there was just a big. I want to say it was between like Galaxy and Mario Kart. I might be completely wrong on those dates, but like others, like they tried to leave that place open for third parties. Then everyone delayed all their stuff to Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm totally wrong then. But like that was, it's an elegant solution if you have games there people want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
I think at very least Witcher and Overwatch will catch interest. Overwatch especially, because it is actually coming out at a budget price for $40. Yeah.
Which I think is the standard price that Overwatch came out at some point. Because I know it came out at $60, but it was like the special edition or whatever that was the only thing you can get. And I think on PC, you could get it for $40. But so it's not like a super budget price, but it being $40 with, I'm guessing, a bunch of stuff already included, I think is a good price for it. I don't think it could have done it. They could have done it at $60. But
they do include a 3-month membership for Switch Online because obviously you cannot play that game without Switch Online,
which you're gonna need for the next thing.
Yeah. So one of the things Nintendo also confirmed during that direct was that Super Nintendo games are coming to the Switch Online service. So they're coming today. I didn't have the full list of games that they put up. I should have probably posted it, but it does include games like F-Zero, Super Metroid, Super Mario World, and stuff like Link to the Past, obviously, is one of the heavy ones that you want on Switch. Super Metroid, Super Mario World. Oh, there we go. Kevin brought it up. Brawl Brothers, which...
The worst Brothers game for sure.
Yeah, on this list, if you want to have a Brothers game, it's not going to be that one.
I was waiting for Ultimate Brothers, personally.
There's a lot of great games on this list, and they match the Japanese list. There's no big like exceptions
no like swaps.
Yeah, so Super Puyo Puyo 2 is one of the big ones. Super Tennis.
Star Fox, Kirby's Dream Land 3.
Stunt Race FX, which I think is them like a shot across the bow saying, yo, we have a FX chip working on this thing.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, cool. Fox and Yoshi's Island. Because, like, when they put that stuff on 3DS, they used, like, the GBA version for Yoshi's Island 2 because they couldn't get the FX chip emulation working. So it looks like they finally mastered that. So this is actually a really decent list. And all that stuff comes out today for Switch subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
So they clearly needed a thing to say because the service launched a year ago.
Yeah, and they haven't really, like... I mean, they have Tetris 99, which is not so nothing.
Tetris 99 is great.
But it feels like that service has been about being able to play those games online and a few bonuses so far. And this feels like the biggest thing they've done for that service since either Tetris 99 or at all. Like,
yeah, it is. It's smart, I guess, to do this right before people's like auto renew comes up, because they don't want people turning it off. They want them to subscribe for another year. And if this is the launch service, hopefully they're able to get a better because honestly, one of my big problems with the NES stuff, besides the fact that most of those games don't hold up great, is that they release two games a month. And that's awful. That is a terrible like scheduling whatever, kerfuffle, whatever you want to call it. Like, it's some of those games are great. Like, oh, we're finally putting this thing on here. But when you only do two a month, that's 24 games in the last year. I'm sure the number's different.
Which
is
like, considering how large the NES's library is really disappointing.
It should be two a week at minimum. Yeah.
The other thing, like, I think this is like a half step towards what people want them to do, which is just like, hey, if you subscribe, you have access to this enormous library of Super Nintendo games, and this is like a way to get to start it. But I don't have much confidence in that they'll expand the library too much beyond this, because I don't think for them they see it as worth the effort to say, yeah, we should put every Super Nintendo game as part of this service.
Right.
But they're going to give you the hits. They're going to give you, like, being able to play Link to the Past on your Switch, not an insignificant thing for a lot of people, I think.
I think with Switch Online, people want Netflix of 2014, of like when they had tons of movies and TV shows and you could just pick whatever. But Nintendo's more thinking like Netflix of 2008, or even like a modern Netflix of like, we have some of that stuff, those archive stuff, but you're really on Switch Online for the new games.
Yeah.
Which maybe
is kind of what it is now, honestly, what Netflix is now, honestly. Yeah, that's like, what I was there's like, some cool stuff, but mostly you're here for the, you know, for Patriot Act, for like Narcos, whatever.
Yeah, Netflix thinks I'm there for Glow, and sometimes I'm there for like, I want to see Burn Notice for the 50th time.
Yeah.
Which I don't, honestly. Fuck Burn Notice. Like, it's a fine show, but
after
that
the
49th
run, it just doesn't hold up, you know?
Yeah, when you're a spy, you don't want to hear that so often. But yeah, they also have an SNES controller that, much like the NES controllers, you can buy exclusively to Switch Online.
Yeah, which is a weird thing.
It's weird, but this time it's not a rail thing. I think they realized that was a weird idea of like, you can only charge it by putting it on the Joy-Cons. It doesn't actually work on the rails.
So is it just USB now?
Yeah, it's just a USB-C. So like in that case, like 8-bit Do makes really good controllers. You could also just get one of those.
Yeah. I think even if the hardware on the 8-bit do ones is better, I think there are people who will like, it's not official. It's not Nintendo making it. I don't want that. And this is for them.
I would get one, but never actually use it to just like have it sitting there.
Yeah,
like,
if I ever want to use this, I never will. But if I ever want to use this, I can use it.
Yeah. Or like connect to a RetroPie or something.
Yeah. Or your PC, you know?
Yeah. So the next big piece of news was Smash Brothers stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The first they showed Banjo a little bit. They're like, okay, well, we haven't shown it since E3, so let's confirm a release date. By the way, that release date's today.
Yeah, which was super surprising, because I feel like the gap between them announcing Joker and then releasing Joker and then between Joker and Hero even was like pretty large. And then this is like, what, the month after?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So what I was told originally was that they're behind, basically. They were behind on DLC stuff. Hero was supposed to be a shadow drop at E3.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So it was supposed to be like, Hero's out today, and also now Banjo's next. But it took a little bit longer with him. I guess he was a more complicated character.
I mean, I can see why.
Yeah, and I imagine licensing also held that thing up quite a bit. But now that they're kind of back on track. So Banjo is out today. We'll talk a bit about him later today in the Gamescast, because both Surreal and I have gotten hands-on time.
Yeah.
They also revealed the next character.
Yeah.
And Andrew and I talked about a little bit about this earlier this week, that on the Nintendo page, they said like a copyright SNK. So we knew it was going to be an SNK character.
Yeah.
Which I think made that character trailer, which is one of the best character trailers, period, for Smash Brothers.
It's super good.
It made it more amazing, because all we knew is it was going to be an SNK character. We didn't know who it was. So the character trailer is the, what was it, the KOF 94 opening?
One of the early ones, for sure.
And it shows everyone like trying to grab the Smash Brothers opening or Smash Brothers invitation.
Like, it's several characters. Like, I think it starts with Ryo, and then it goes to Geese, and then it goes to a couple other characters. Yeah. Iori at one point, and then it lands.
Yeah,
like,
Nakaruru. Basically, people who you'd think might they have valid claim on a Smash Brothers representation.
I think it would have been even cool. I know it's like a KOF thing, but I think considering how wild the rumors got about like, oh, it could be a character from Metal Slug, it could be Athena from like Cycle Soldier, like not KOF Athena. They could have gone a little bit wilder with the characters, but like the fact that it was animated in that that traditional style was like such a fantastic touch.
Honestly, my favorite character trailer. But I think like when you make those, you kind of have to worry about like, we don't want to put someone in here that people might want
one
more.
Might actually want.
Yeah. Because then like that's teasing and like you, people get pissy.
That would be as crazy as like having Simon Belmont in the game and then making Alucard an assist trophy instead. That would just be,
you know what I was thinking about the other day? That they teased Kid Dracula at one point and then like they showed his shadow. I don't recall him ever being in the game at any point.
They
like,
teased a sticker.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a sticker or like he was supposed to be like one of the background monsters or something. Yeah. Anyway, but like they eventually showed Terry Bogard, which is fantastic. I love Terry.
Yeah.
I love Terry's like fake English, like throughout the entire direct, I was streaming it last night. I was just going like in my head, like, "Are you okay, Busta Wolf?" kind of things.
Yeah,
I'm imagining Kirby saying those things, which is gonna be adorable.
Oh, dude, yes, he's gonna have a Fatal Fury cat, and then that should be the action figure they make, and that'll be the one that I buy. I'm very curious to see if he plays similarly to how Ryu does, where if you do the commands for his moves, if they're strengthened, because I think like maybe doing that a third time isn't as interesting. But you know, what else are you gonna like? How else are you gonna diversify that character in a way that makes them interesting and cool.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited about this, like having what's basically Capcom versus SNK3 in this game, with Ryu versus Terry for the first time since CVS 2.
Yeah.
I think is a really cool thing. The fact that Capcom isn't doing it is crazy, but I'll take what I can get.
So at the time they also did announce like, oh no, there's only one more character left. Who's it going to be? Oh wait, we're actually doing a season pass 2. So you don't need to worry. There's going to be like 5 more characters after that.
And Sakurai saw the next year of his life fade away.
He looks so tired.
Obscurity.
There was a Smash thing afterwards that he was like, looks like I'm never going to get a vacation. And I'm like, I would take a break. I would be fine if we just waited a year.
That's the last character they announced is like, finally, I can go on vacation.
The last character is me.
I would like to announce my stream channel that I never use because I'm on vacation.
Did you see the part of that where he like played 2 characters at once? During that was phenomenal.
He is crazy.
Such good content.
And he was in like last. Oh, he was like, oh, it was so easy last time because like Hero has a menu, so I can just do like this. But now I have to fight like this. I'm like, both of those are weird.
Yeah.
Dude, no. Yeah.
It shows like he has like a bit of a fighting game background.
Yeah, he was a Street Fighter 2 competitive player.
Yeah, it's also. And so, like, I think Terry Bogard makes sense as like him, like as a callback to like retro stuff. And I think a lot of people were upset that, you know, SNK doesn't have the notoriety, like they're wasting a slot, and that just seems like a weird thing because I think people forget that a lot of the appeal of Smash choices were like, who's this guy?
Yeah,
right. Because like even in Melee, they had Marth, which people had not heard of. They had Game and Watch, which people might have heard of, but like not really. Like,
yeah, Rob was a failed
real
accessory for 2 years.
Exactly. So like having these weird out of like nowhere characters, I like for a lot of people, is like really cool. I like that they're not just saying like, well, who's popular,
right?
And the fact that they have more characters on the way kind of, I hope, alleviates a lot of that frustration of like, well, maybe your character can make it in, you know, in the next pack, right? So I'm curious to see if they take another like crossover direction with the next pack, or if they go like, now let's go back to more Nintendo characters.
Legend of Kanto asks, hi there, Imran Serial. Great to have you on the show. Nintendo held a direct last night, including information about Super Smash Bros. Ultimate DLC, confirming that they will expand the DLC offering past the original Fighter's Pass into the future. Given that all the character choices have been an assortment of third-party choices, do you think this game has any real limitations anymore? Or do you think Nintendo, and he wrote Samurai, I assume that's autocorrect, but Samurai's a pretty funny name for Masahiro Sakurai, can essentially lay claim to anyone they see fit. Also, do you foresee a future in which characters outside of gaming are given a chance to beat on Mario and friends? Keep up the good work, Lucas.
So I think it almost immediately you can kind of rule out any sort of Sony cooperation, I think. I wouldn't rule out anything Microsoft related at this point with Banjo being in the game. But I don't think they're going to do, I don't think they're going to do Master Chief just because but maybe they will, right? That's no longer off limits.
Yeah.
But I don't think we'll see something like Kratos. I don't think we'll see, you know, Nathan Drake, even though that'd be cool. But I think Sony definitely seems like they're living in their like ivory tower right now of like, we don't want to do any crossover stuff unless it's within our own ecosystem. So I like that stuff feels like it won't happen, but anything other than that, like I think anything video game related I think is up for grabs at this point. I think at one point Sakurai straight up said like, we don't want Goku in there because he's not like a video game character.
Yeah.
Or am I just be making that up?
No, he said like they have to have originated in video games.
Right. So
it can't just be that they've been in video games, they just start there.
Yeah. And at this point, like Smash's roster is so large, like Goku's like the only character that is that feels like they're missing in terms of like holy crap announcements.
Yeah.
But at this point, I don't think there's really anything outside of like Sony stuff that feels super off limits. Because I mean, at one point, people were talking about Doom Guy, which wouldn't fit like that game's aesthetic. But no one thought like
Snake.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they have so many characters and they have like they're really good about toning that stuff down. Like even like on a similar note, like they added Sans to the game, right? Like as like a Mii costume for the shoot for the Mii shooter,
which is cool.
Yeah, like, it's like a cool way to get people in. And I didn't see like any like, oh man, they didn't actually put him in the game. That's everyone is just happy to have the option to play as him in any way.
Yeah, Sakurai told a story after like Toby Fox came to his house and they played Smash Brothers together.
That's
and like
crazy.
Sakurai
That's
so drove cool. him home in his. I think Toby Fox is on Twitter saying like, "Yeah, Sakurai drove me back to my hotel afterwards in his car, and she kept calling the Batmobile."
That dude is.
I was like,
the
"This
life.
Is the weirdest story I've." Because like, what? This is a guy who made like a fan game a couple of years or was making Mother fan games and then made his own indie thing, which has now become the most popular thing in Japan in like 5 years.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't see them ruling out anything at this point, but I could imagine like. I mean, honestly, I'm at the point where I would want any of the Fire Emblem characters from Three Houses. Like, Claude would be probably the one just because he would be an archer, which would be different for Fire Emblem characters. But in terms of what I want, there's just not a whole lot of, like, major Nintendo characters left that I can think of that I would want, right? I'm sure if I scoured like a list of like here's some cool Nintendo games, you know.
I want a different Zelda character than, like, the same basic ones we've had.
Yeah.
So, like, Urbosa would be great.
Yeah, I think any of those like those four guardians, I think they're called, would be good additions. I'm trying to think of like who's a good like high.
All the ones I can think of have been like they would maybe be clone like Octolings would be neat, but they'd just be Inklings.
Yeah,
like I'm like Nintendo's kind of hitting in a new IP, so somebody from Astro Chain might be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see them. I could see them promote like because they did that with like Marth to some degree and Kid Icarus or Pit. I mean, of like, hey, we're promoting an upcoming game by putting them in Smash Brothers.
Yeah, Roy was originally his game had not been released when he was in Melee.
Yeah, so like they could do something like that. Maybe next. Like, I'm surprised. I guess maybe not super surprised that we haven't had like an Arms character in there yet.
Yeah, the Arms would be good. He was an assist or punch. What was his name?
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah,
maybe that's why they're not in the game.
Springman. He was in
Springman. Yeah.
Yeah, he was in the as assist trophy.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll
one
see.
Of them could
Isaac would be a good one. Golden Sun has not been represented.
Yeah.
But in terms of outside Nintendo stuff, who would you want? Who
would I want? Like, if we're sticking to games.
Yeah.
I mean, I do this for every fighting game, but I would love love for there to be a Suda Grasshopper character. I think the coolest thing they could do is put the Smith Syndicate from Killer 7 in there.
Yeah.
I've thought about this a lot as them as a fighting game character where it's sort of like Double from Skullgirls where every move is like they transform into a different Smith basically. So like for a side B, he could turn into Mask the Smith and throw grenade launchers up B. He could be Cade or a Coyote and spring upwards. It'd be very difficult to do, but they've like that would be the thing that I would want. But or like Travis Touchdown, I think would be an easier.
Yeah, Travis makes a lot of sense, especially like he's not that far removed from Joker. They're both from M-rated games. They both have like very stylized looks. Like, it would make sense.
And if you need to talk move list, Sakurai, I'm always open. Obviously, you should consult me and not Suda for this move list. For sure.
He flew Toby Fox in. Like he can. He can pay for you.
I'm up there in Toby Fox level for sure. Who would you want, Imran?
Sora.
Okay, yeah.
Sora, I think...
Kingdom Hearts would be a good crossover for them.
Yeah, I think it's the last big, like, holy shit character, especially of Japanese gaming.
Yeah. And then I think Nintendo's just, like, trying to work up their, like, negotiating muscles. So it's like, all right, we got Xbox on the list. Who's next on the rung? Disney. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's license this character.
Honestly, like, I know you think Sony's off limits, but I feel like if they became requested enough, I think Nintendo would be like, okay, I know you guys don't want to, but let's talk about this a bit.
Okay, Who would be a character? Like, I think if I could pick a Sony character, it would honestly be Cat from Gravity Rush.
Yeah, Gravity Rush would be great.
Yeah.
I think Sony would probably go...
Ratchet and Clank.
Ratchet, yeah.
Yeah. Crash Bandicoot. I think any of those mascot characters would be really good fits.
I think Crash would work really well. I'd be surprised with how requested he is if he's not already on a list somewhere.
Yeah.
Of, like, let's see if we can
get
this done.
I would imagine Nintendo is aware of who Crash is at this point.
Yes. Yeah. He was outside their building. They were.
Yeah. And also, like, those remasters have proven to be ridiculously popular, so I think they know.
But, yeah... I would be very interested to see what they do next. Like, honestly, half the fun of this is just finding out who they pick.
Yeah, because at this point, it's like, I've gone from like, oh, they have to put this character in there, to like, great, surprise me.
You know who would be weird? Francis York Morgan from Deadly Premonition.
that would be definitely a weird thing.
But it's also possible, because Deadly Premonition 2 not only exists, which is shocking to everybody,
mm-hmm.
but Deadly Premonition 1 is coming to Switch as Deadly Premonition Origins.
Yeah, which is, do you think that's like a legally required thing where it's like, if we want to put it on another platform, we have to change the name of it or something?
I don't know, maybe. Like they had.
Because why call it Origins otherwise? Why not just call it Deadly Premonition?
Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe they didn't want to be styled with a late port kind of thing.
Yeah, like, this is the old game.
Yeah.
This one's got new things?
Which I kind of wonder if it is the definitive edition they released after, which like mostly just lets you break the game mm-hmm. way earlier. So that's you didn't true. Have to really deal with the combat.
Which is a good thing in that game.
Yes, that was not, that game's combat was not great, but it was very weird in a way that I appreciate.
Oh god, I remember the enemy calls in that game being like super disturbing.
Yes.
And that was like the best part of combat, was just like hearing them like, don't kill me.
Yeah. Deadly Premonition 2, at first I was like, okay, this is weird. One, why does this game exist? Two, is Hidetaka Suihiro working on it? And that's Square 65 for anyone
yeah,
who doesn't
he's absolutely
know.
Doing it.
He was the original writer and director of those games. He is good at making weird shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he claimed he had never seen Twin Peaks when that game came out.
I find that hard to believe.
He is. You know, I played Yooka-Laylee at PAX, that new Yooka-Laylee. I was like, oh, this is a lot like Tropical Freeze. He's like, we've never played Tropical Freeze. I'm like,
okay.
Motherfucker, you're lying.
I see what
you're doing.
That.
I see what you're doing. I understand why you're doing it. Don't bullshit me.
Also, if you haven't, you should.
Yeah. Like, wow, you just happened to make the exact same game. Mm-hmm. Amazing. But yeah, so Swery eventually did go on Twitter. Like, yeah, I'm the writer and director of this game. So like, great. This is going to be hopefully just as dumb and just as weird. I was looking at screenshots of it yesterday. The apartment that the character is sitting in at one point straight up is the apartment from D4. The Dark Dreams Don't Die.
That's cool. I like
so
that
I kind of wonder if he's going to wrap up that story in Deadly Premonition 2.
That would be super. That's, I mean, not to spoil anything, but like that would be a pseudo like twist.
Yes.
If you're thinking about titles that came out this year. But I like that Nintendo is basically embracing their role as like the nostalgia factory for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they're just saying, hey, this thing that you liked, we're bringing it back. And then they've done that with Bayonetta, and now they're doing it with Deadly Premonition.
Right.
Which is, it's cool. I like that this is happening. It's like, I'm not as big of a fan of like Deadly Premonition as a lot of people, but I saw this and like kind of had like, that's super cool.
No, I don't want to play this. I want to watch someone play it.
Yes, that is the proper way to explain Deadly Premonition, is to watch someone else do it.
I want
to
watch entertaining. I want to watch Giant Bomb play it. Mm-hmm. Like
like a group of two groups of two editors playing through the game at the same time, kind of switching off. Yeah,
yeah. Let's talk later. Yeah. But also, that game is going to be Switch exclusive at launch, says the Rising Star CEO. So it might be come to later other platforms eventually, but for right now, they're only talking about Switch.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other stuff in the Direct. I didn't write down all, or I didn't like all of it like a big discussion point, but Sergio, you specifically wanted to talk about Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE.
Yeah, so that's getting a Switch port. That was up there for me in terms of Wii U games that I missed.
Yeah.
Even though I had a Wii U, there was just a thing of like, by the time, like maybe a year, basically anything after 3D World, which is, it's still wild to me that game is still not out on Switch.
It's coming.
Like, fingers crossed, but like Mirage Sessions was definitely one of those games where it's like, I don't know if I want to play it on a Wii U.
Yeah.
Even though, like, it wasn't that
It also
crazy.
Came out very late. It was like 2016, right?
It was pretty, it was definitely around the time where it's like, I'm no longer interested in anything that's coming out on the Wii U.
Yeah.
And for all intents and purposes, I've heard nothing but good things about Tokyo Mirage Sessions. So I'm into the idea of them bringing that back. This is one of those things where I am excited for this.
Yeah.
So.
I've played enough of it to know it's great. I've seen people say that it's better than Persona 5 to them.
Okay.
Like, in terms of, JV's shaking his head. Or shaking his head, yes.
He's nodding.
Say.
He's
nodding. Yes, that's the word.
That's the word. Yes, nodding.
Yeah.
He's shaking his head no, but it's like for a yes. And we're getting like stuff like Doom 64, which everybody obviously wanted, mm-hmm. Two Assassin's Creed game, Town, that game from Game Freak, is now
which also
Little
a Toby
Hero.
Fox composed game.
Yeah.
It's a Toby Fox Direct.
Yeah, it's a weird that guy. I love how prominent he is now.
He's doing like anime
amazing.
Endings and like
He also did like a new composition of Megalovania for the Sans outfit.
Yeah, so you have to buy the Sans outfit, but you get Megalovania in the game. So
yeah,
I'm definitely doing that.
100%. But yeah, like really strong Nintendo Direct to have like out of nowhere, it seems like.
Yeah, they always have a September one, but like it's usually not this strong.
This reminds me of when they announced, when we had that week where they announced the Switch and like we got a bunch of Red Dead details in the same yeah. like span of like 48 hours. Like the Nintendo just swings wild at the weirdest times,
yes.
which is really cool.
I mean, this year it's like they want to sell the Switch Lite, so they're trying to push everything. It's like, here's what you should tell your, here's the list you make your parents.
Yeah.
To like, oh, well, all these games are coming. Like, clearly I want this. A couple other things I want to mention. Obra Dinn is coming to Switch mm-hmm. and other consoles. Buy Obra Dinn. Buy Obra Dinn. Obra Dinn is great. JB also nodding. It's an amazing game.
Yeah.
Amazing soundtrack. Don't read anything about it. Buy it.
Just understand that Papers, Please is one of the greatest games ever made.
Yeah.
And that this is by the same people. So.
Yeah, it's better. Than Papers, Please.
It is better than Papers, Please.
I find that hard.
I played it with a friend. That's a great way to do it. We had like a little notebook and we were writing down names and trying to figure everything out. Don't read anything about it. Don't absorb the twist before you get to it, but it's an amazing thing. And it happens fairly early, but you're gonna love that game if you play it.
Don't even watch a trailer.
Yeah.
Just buy it.
Yeah.
Take a leap of faith. Buy it. Play it. Love it. There you go. Yeah.
Maybe listen to some music on YouTube if you want to be like convinced, because the music is fantastic too. Obra Dinn is great. There's also a Xenoblade remake or remaster. It's not clear, but they changed all the models. All the textures are different. It's clearly Beyblade in like Xenoblade 2's
engine. Kind of like
engine.
Final Fantasy 8 tier of like, well, the original models are kind of like,
it's weird. Like it's hard to define. Cause like Shadow of the Colossus is a remake that's based on the source code of the original game. Final Fantasy 8 is a remaster that has none of the source code of the original game. Mm-hmm. It's all rebuilt new. So like, how do we define stuff at this point?
Yeah. Reupholstered.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. Like that. It's interesting to me that that game is a thing where Nintendo had to be dread kicking and screaming to localize that title in America. And then now it's a thing. There's been three games. It's become an anthology series. There's been another port to 3DS.
Yeah.
Like the characters in Smash Brothers. Like,
I guess we'll have a successful franchise, guys.
They clearly want people to be like more attached to this franchise.
Yeah.
With Xenoblade 1, also a fantastic game. I kind of wonder if they're going to update any of it. Like the trailer showed the shoulder of the Bionis, which is like in that game, our conceit is you're living on a giant that is so astronomically big that you can't perceive it. So everything that's on it is basically land. It's basically like if Earth were just one vertebrae of a bigger thing.
Yeah.
So the end of the trailer showed the shoulder, which is like cut content from the original game.
Okay.
So they seem to be reinserting that back into the game, which is cool.
Yeah, which is if you're going to bring that game back, that's definitely a thing you should do.
And also Assassin's Creed Rebel Collection, which we talked about as a rumor here, is Assassin's Creed 4 and Rogue, which I might play Rogue. I never got a chance to play that.
Yeah.
All right, next on to the next story. Ikumi Nakamura. She was that very nervous but happy but well-loved person during the Bethesda E3 conference that came out to introduce Ghostwire Tokyo.
Yeah, she's like the creative director on that project, and she was, for all intents and purposes, like the lead person.
Yes, she is Shinji Mikami's apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he brought her over when he was working on Vanquish with Platinum Games, and like they came over to Tango from there, and she was also on Bayonetta and Okami as an art director. So she has some chops, basically.
Yeah.
This was her first big project. People loved her at E3. She announced yesterday, abruptly on Twitter, that she is leaving Tango Gameworks and is looking for new work.
Yeah. And apparently, like, she had her LinkedIn, according to this story by Matt Kim at IGN.
Yeah, Joseph Noop and Matt Kim wrote the story.
She has a link to her LinkedIn page, which is, like, such a power move.
After 9 years as creative director and art director at Tango and ZeniMax, I felt here is one of ends of the journey, Nakamura wrote. I learned from the talented people I've worked with, and I respect. Contact me if anyone wants to work with me. So, this is... If you don't cover the game industry, this might not be this could be a thing that's either great or, you know, could be nothing. If you do cover the game industry, you know a creative director leaving mid-development means something is different.
Yeah.
Something is massively changing with that game.
Yeah, like, it's hard to, like, without much more information, it's hard to speculate, but it does seem like something happened either. It's nice to say or maybe think that she got a better offer, but... Mm-hmm. You don't get a lot of better offers than being creative director on
and
a
also,
major
like,
triple budget game.
If you get a better offer, you don't put your LinkedIn into the tweet.
Exactly. This is definitely a case where something happened and she was either frustrated or pushed out or something like that. And is looking to move on, yeah. Which is unfortunate because it definitely seemed like that game had a lot of interesting ideas, and a lot of it felt like it stemmed from her approach to horror, which she had been posting about on Twitter of like, hey, here's how you do horror, here's sort of my approach.
Yeah.
She was posting a lot on Twitter of talking, you know, basically talking shop, right? And the game seemed like it was going to be very much inspired by that. It doesn't seem like that game is super far along. Mm-hmm. It does not seem far along enough that people can run with her ideas.
Yeah.
It definitely seems like the game could shift in tone like pretty drastically at this point and not be the vision that she had imagined at this point.
Yeah, it's curious because I liked seeing her at E3. Liked what she had to say about the game. I liked that CG trailer quite a bit in terms of tone. Mm-hmm. It was also very cool to have like a Japanese female director like out there as the face prominent. Of the game. Yeah, that's very rare.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of that.
And it's disappointing that if she's not going to be, because it does sound like whatever was coming up with that game was not what she wanted. Mm-hmm. However, if that's through corporate meddling or that the studio couldn't pull it off technologically or whatever, who knows? But yeah, it's disappointing. Yeah. And
I hope she finds a position of that caliber.
Right.
You know, she definitely feels like like you said, she has the chops to do it. And so I hope that she finds prominent placement within this industry and gets to direct basically something that would be more akin to her vision.
I kind of wonder, like, what's going to happen? Is that game canceled? Is Shinji Mikami going to step in? Because he's got out of game directing. Evil Within was basically his last game.
Yeah. I think the second one, I don't think, was directed by him.
Yeah, it was. I wonder if that it's a Western developer. I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but he might step in for this one. Like I said, Shinji Mikami might, or this could be Mikami's last straw. Maybe he's done. Maybe he's like, I'm leaving Tango Gameworks. I've heard various rumors about what he's been talking about doing for a while. All does that sound exciting? So maybe this is going to push him out to do those things. I do kind of wonder like what becomes of Tango if this game is canceled.
Like, because it seems they've had the Evil Within and that's pretty much been in, and it seems like people like those games but they don't feel like they've broken through.
The first game sold a million, second game did not at all. Like Bethesda is not super kind to developers who don't constantly like produce hits.
I mean, to be fair, like I feel like they are more forgiving than a lot of other places, like, you know, from what I remember, Wolfenstein 2 didn't sell super great, and they're still following through with that trilogy.
But there's also stuff with, like, Prey back in the day.
Sure.
So, and to be clear, a creative director changing does not always mean a bad thing. Like, and I mentioned this on Twitter, Alex Eniel, who does Brave Wave Studios and, like, CVX Freak, for people who know, he mentioned that Resident Evil 4 is a historic example of Hideki Kamiya was working on the game. He wanted to make it a more action thing, like it ended up becoming Devil May Cry, what he wanted to make. But Shinji Mikami went, this is not really Resident Evil, so we're going to change you out, and I'm going to jump in for this one. There were some other iterations between those two things happening, but like creative director can sometimes be a change can be for the better.
Sure.
So maybe that's going to happen with Ghostwire Tokyo, but hopefully Nakamura
does. The circumstances on it did not seem as like, I don't think it was like a Capcom situation like this. This does not seem like that situation.
This did not seem friendly.
But again, it doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing.
But from that to a story that I saw this morning, popular Fortnite streamer, and I might be getting this name wrong, but also I don't care that much, TFUE, used a racial slur in a stream, then deleted it. This is from PC Gamer by Jody McGregor. And I think original reporting was by The Verge on this one. So you may know Fortnite Fortnite Pro Turner Tifoey Tenney for his legal dispute with FaZe Clan, with whom he was under contract, or simply because he's almost 7 million followers on Twitch. That's a lot of followers. I have like 50. You may also know him for controversies like his two bans from Twitch, including a 30-day ban he received in 2018 for using a racial slur, or the time he was suspended from Fortnite by Epic for using account selling. Or for account selling. Tenney also plays Minecraft on his channel, and during a recent stream, he once again used a racial slur, saying in an exaggerated accent, "You guys fucking killed all the villagers, man. Y'all motherfuckers killed them, N-word. You can suck my pee-pee, man." He seems like a very cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
Twitch has a 3-strikes rule for streamers that results in indefinite suspension for the third infraction for the community guidelines. That includes any content or activity that promotes, encourages, or facilitates discrimination, denigration, objectification, harassment, or violence based on the following characteristics. The first of which is race, ethnicity, or national origin. Simply using a racial slur isn't necessarily enough to break those guidelines, however, and previously Tyler Ninja Blevins managed to get around them because he'd used a racial slur while rapping.
Ah, yes, the rapping clause in that contract.
he inserted the N-word into a song that did not have the N-word.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Which is like, yo, it's not that hard. Just, I've managed to do it. Just don't be on the internet. Don't be anywhere.
And remember that time you didn't say a racial slur? Keep doing that.
Like, I have hundreds of hours of content on the internet to have not said a racial slur. It's super easy and like, to not do it.
Look, I've gotten big mad at video games before, but like, racial slurs are not what I go to. I go for like more personal things when I'm trying to be toxic to someone in Dota 2 who is not getting what I'm trying to tell them. And like, it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, you don't have, this is such an unforced error.
Yeah. Like, he deleted the video, so he knows, clearly.
Yeah.
But, like, it's out there. It's the internet. It's out there.
Yeah. I think it also, it does mention that this is, like, his third strike in a lot of ways, but I'm very curious as to considering how big he is and the fact that Twitch maybe feels a little bit vulnerable and that they've lost their biggest streamer in Ninja.
Yeah.
How much they're going to stick to these kinds of things going forward, because, I mean, they tried to ban Dr. Disrespect for a while.
Tried to ban.
And then he came back, right?
So 2 weeks later for committing a felony.
Right. So it definitely seems like we have not faced a situation where someone does something so bad that they're just done.
There was
right?
that thing a couple of, I've forgotten the names, but there was the Fortnite streamer who beat his girlfriend on stream. And he was initially temp banned and then had his ban like reversed automatically. But that's a thing of like, when people called it out, they're like, okay, this is you can't have this guy back on. And Twitch is like, yeah, you're right, we can't. It seems like the modus operandi for Twitch is you unban automatically.
Yeah,
and if there is an extenuating circumstance, then you ban permanently.
Yeah, you're always adapting to what people are saying about you versus trying to be preventative, which for one thing, like that should not be the level that you get to before you're like, maybe this person shouldn't be on our service anymore. And also, I feel like it would be helpful for them to try a little bit and say like, let's err on the side of caution more often than like, well, this guy has a lot of followers so they can do whatever they want until they do something that would be terrible for our brand.
Right. And I think it's the algorithm based like tech valley society thing of like, this is what everyone does. They want to let the algorithm handle it. If this person got so many reports, then clearly they did something wrong, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
We'll have one person look at it and then another person look at it later. Like, you need people in charge of these things because so much of life is nuanced.
Right, exactly. Like, you it's easy to rely on algorithms for a lot of this stuff and say, like, well, the algorithm isn't affected by this change of, like, this person saying this thing.
Right.
But I think long-term, you need, like, that more critical human eye to say, like, long-term, over the course of several of these algorithms, how is that going to affect us? And if the idea is that by letting these people have a pass, that your brand as a whole is like, well, Twitch is where people go to just say shitty things to people when they're streaming.
Yeah.
Like that is a cost that can't necessarily be measured in algorithms maybe yet. And I think that's something that people need to consider more about how they attempt to think about punishments and that kind of thing going forward.
Yeah. I will say we joked a little bit about the heated gamer moment thing at the beginning. And like, I think PC Gamer used it in their tweet as well. It's a funny joke. But let's not call these heated gamer moments. Those aren't. It's racism. If you use a racial epithet, it's racism.
Yeah. And whether or not like there's the whole thing about like, oh, in his heart, he's maybe not, you know, a racist. But it's like your actions are what are all we know. There's no way in which like that is a statement that to me holds water. Like even if said by people who know him, like that's all I know is the things that you have said. Like your actions are the expression of who you are in a lot of ways. And so like that is the only thing I can quantify and say, like, here's your record, right? Your resume as a person. So like, I think that the whole like intentions thing is not necessarily something that holds up all the time.
There's a lot of things that people say of like when you accuse them of being racist, or like, that's the worst thing you could say. I'm so like, it's not in my heart. Yeah. I'm not racist. It's like, okay, but then don't use racial epithets. Like, that's the main thing. Like that is the line. Like, I'm not a murderer. Don't kill somebody.
Right. So like, yeah, I've murdered someone, but I'm not a murderer at heart. Well, it's like, you did a murder, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
You lose the right to denial when you do something that, you know,
I think
beyond denial.
Yeah. On the flip side, I do think it's important that in these cases, it's because people are so defensive about it that I think we do should err on the side of like condemning the action and not the person, because then you get into this kind of like back and forth like, well, is this person a good person or not? Which I don't think is a useful discussion. Right. I think it's more important to focus on like this thing that you did is wrong and you shouldn't do it versus like this. You are a bad person, because I don't think that's that's as healthy a conversation to have.
OK, so here's the thing. Growing up as a brown person in the American South, good people can have racist moments, and then they don't become good people in your eyes, because you grow up in certain ways. You grow up with certain biases and ignorances that you don't really understand are bad until they come up.
Right. I think a lot of people can relate to the idea of being like having been really shitty as like a teenager.
Yeah.
Like I certainly had a phase where I was using a lot of these words, but like I grew, like as soon as people realize like this is wrong and this is why it's wrong and here's why you should stop saying it. It's like, to me, it was a thing that I saw. It's like, oh, okay. I understand the context of these words now. I don't want to use them anymore because like I am hurting people when I say them.
I used gay as a like demean name until I had a gay friend. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like,
yeah.
Why should, if someone was like, yo, that shit's so brown, I'd be like, no, that's not good. Like,
and so I think at some point most people are confronted with like the dissonance of like, I am a good person versus I have said and done things that are like that are shitty, right? And I think a lot of the times it can split one of two ways. You can either say like, I'm going to be better, or I'm going to say that, no, you're wrong and I'm going to keep doing it because I insist that I'm a good person.
But the apology video is a thing too, that like everyone does thing, and then they do the same things over and over again.
Right.
I feel like the thing for this would have been not deleting it, saying like, hey, I did this thing. I'm really sorry. I'll donate that stream's like profits to, you know, whatever organization.
Right.
Like that would have been the thing to do. When you fuck up, you got to pay the consequences.
Yeah,
and whether that's culturally or monetarily or whatever, you fucked up. Like, fix it.
Because I think so much of the defensiveness comes with like, no, I'm a good person. Like, and to defend yourself being a good person, you say like, this thing isn't as wrong as you think it is. So I think it's much like better, like even pragmatically as like a streamer who wants to maintain a good social following, to say like, look, I know, I get that this thing that I did is wrong. That's not who I am. And I'm going to like be better going forward.
Yeah.
Like I think the way to handle a lot of that stuff. But, you know, a lot of people don't want to do that. So,
yeah, be better going forward. That's the lesson we take from this. I'm going to hit the next one very quickly. Call director Ben Wheatley to direct Tomb Raider 2. This is from Deadline by Mike Fleming Jr. So Ben Wheatley, who has directed, let's see, did I write that down? I did not write that down. But yeah, Ben Wheatley, he's a cult director. He is on tap for the next Tomb Raider movie starring Alicia Vikander. Oh, that's Mike Fleming. That's the writer of the article.
That's the wrong Mike Fleming Jr.
But yeah, he is on tap for the next Tomb Raider movie. Did you see the first one?
No, I've heard things about it.
It's
though.
The perfect airplane movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like it had script problems. I think I interviewed Alicia Vikander after seeing it, and like she was pretty defensive about the movie. I'm like, yeah, this part didn't make sense, and she's like, no, it made perfect sense. It's fine. She was fine in it. It was like a bit by bit retelling of that first reboot game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then changed some weird stuff. And like didn't really know what it wanted to be. Maybe the sequel would be better. So he did a couple of Doctor Who episodes. He did
High Rise. That was a cool movie.
Yeah.
Really trippy.
Cool. Okay. So maybe this will be like a really avant-garde Tomb Raider movie. I would like to see that. I'd like to see someone
Tomb Raider get weird.
Yeah. Why not?
Weirder than those reboot games got, for sure.
The reboot games could have stood to get a lot weirder.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so that movie is set for March 19th, 2021. So I've always been fascinated by that.
Yeah, video game movies are always this weird fascination that I have that I'm not always super into, but it's like, I'm curious to see how they adapt it, even though I haven't seen this particular one. It's always interesting to see how people will tackle those projects, because like, if you think books aren't adaptable, try adapting a video game into a movie.
But Surreal, that is so far away.
Yeah.
If I wanted to know what is coming to the mom and grop shops today, where should I look?
Well, you could look at the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show, hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. All right. Out today, Phantasy General 2 is out on PC. River City Girls, which I played at PAX and I thought was great.
I played it at EVO. I'm not like a beat-em-up guy, but I'm interested in this one.
Yeah, hopefully, like, maybe that game just demos super well, but I really enjoyed the hell of that. Mm-hmm. Headliner, Novi News, Green Hell, Hyper Forma, Quarters Please, Gnome's Garden, Lost King, Astivine Menace.
That's a name.
Astivine? Astivine makes more sense than Astivine. Yeah. 50 Words by POI Pogi? Mm. Battle okay. Supremacy, Ground Assault, Whoopo, Definitive Edition, If My Heart Had Wings, The Battle of Mahjong, Pocket Clothier.
Those are two games, by the way. If My Heart Had Wings and The Battle of Mahjong. It's not like, The Battle of Mahjong.
A visual novel about dating and Mahjong. Pocket Clothier, Spaces Cows, Rugby Champions, and today's SNES games, which we mentioned earlier. Yeah. New dates, and because they had a direct today, there's actually quite a few of these. The Sinking City Switch release date is now September 12, 2019. Doom 64, November 22nd. Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE Encore, January 17th. Divinity Original Sin 2 Definitive Edition, which has like Steam connection, so you can cross save between the two. Out yesterday, August 4th, Deadly Premonition Origins, or I'm sorry, September 4th. I did that twice. Deadly Premonition Origins, out September 4th. Little Town Hero, October 16th. Trials of Mana, April 24th. Overwatch on Switch, October 15th. Jedi Outcast 2, and I think also Jedi Academy is coming out the same day, September 24th, 2020. No, I'm sorry, September 24th, 2019. I'm bad at dates. I wrote a whole... This is why I relied so much on the GI Guide, which, hilariously, I automated right before we got let go. Mm-hmm. So that's... Feeling real proud of that one. Assassin's Creed Rebel Collection comes out December 6th, and Devil May Cry 2.
Best, but definitely not... But maybe least.
Why are people... why are they releasing it alone? Why? Why, yeah. Capcom?
Because, well, they did the first one.
I guess... I mean, I guess it makes it easier for me to just get DMC 3 when the time comes, but...
Just wait for the whole collection to come out on Switch at some point with 3. Yeah. But and also, like, 3 is the one you want to play.
Yeah, 3 is the one. I bet 4 comes at some point, too, but we'll see.
Oh, Dante for Smash. That would be a good addition.
Yeah, Dante would work. Yeah. Devil May Cry 2, September 19th. Deal of the day. I totally forgot to do this. So if anyone has a deal of the day and you're wrong, let me know.
Give us your favorite prices out there for games. Do you want to just jump to reader mail or do we?
Well, now is the time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunny... Yeah. Speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Third Love. The Kind of Honeys are all rocking Third Love bras, and you should too. I realize this is super weird for me to read. I talked to Greg about it at dinner, and he's like, yeah, it's fucking weird. But I think, like, we both agree it is super cool that not only do we have such a huge female audience that, like, they feel like advertising with us, but that they continue to advertise with us. That's amazing.
So it's proving successful? Yeah.
Yeah. Like... when we worked at GI, I've seen the breakdown of our audience there. It was mostly male. It's cool that, like, we have, like, female audience people, like, that they can advertise with us and they see it as profitable to do so. But Third Love uses data points generated by millions of women who have taken their Fit Finder quiz to design bras with breast size and shape in mind for a perfect fit and premium feel. Third Love offers more than 70 sizes, including their signature half cup sizes. Skip the trip. Find your fit with Third Love's online fit finder, order, and try on at home. No more awkward fitting room experiences. Perfect fit promise. Every customer has 60 days to wear it, wash it, and put it to the test. If you don't love it, return it, and Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need, so you have literally nothing to lose. It will be a gain for someone, no matter what you do. Third Love's team of expert fit stylists are dedicated to helping you find your perfect fit. Fit stylists are available every day to help via text, chat, or phone. Returns and exchanges are free and easy. Hands down, the most comfortable bra you'll ever own. Straps that won't slip and tagless labels, no itching. Lightweight, super thin memory foam cups mold to your shape and are proprietary to Third Love. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, and right now they're offering... Kind of Funny listeners, 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/games now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/games, G-A-M-E-S, for 15% off today. We're also sponsored by Raycon. It's 2019. Everyone needs a pair of wireless earbuds. I have these right here. These are not nearly as good as the Raycon ones. I bought these for budget because I was like, I'm going to lose these. I'm an idiot. But if you want a actually good pair, Raycon. Before you go dropping hundreds of dollars on a pair, you will need to check out the wireless buds from them. You already know Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and that they sound just as amazing. But the latest model is their best one yet, with about 6 hours of playtime. I get about three, and it sucks. I'm like halfway through the day, I'm like, shit, I should have brought like a wireless battery or something. They have seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. Raycon's wireless earbuds are so comfortable, they're perfect for on-the-go listening and for taking phone calls. Cool Greg has been rocking those earbuds, and he loves them. In fact, he gave them the Cool Greg hand gesture seal of approval. Unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet. There's no dangling wires or stems. You've heard me, you've not heard me talk about it. You've heard Greg and Andrea and Fran talk about how the company was founded by Ray J and celebrities like Snoop Dogg and Brandy and J.R. Smith and are obsessed with Raycons. Pick up a pair and see what the hype is all about. Now is the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get your 50% off your order at buyraycon.com/KF Games. That's letter K, F, Games. That's buyraycon.com/KF Games for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Buyraycon.com, because I messed it up before, /KF Games. All right, on to reader mail. Billy the Door says, hello. Some more DLC fighters are announced for Smash Ultimate. Personally love Smash, so that means I'll throw all the money I have for more fighters. But Smash is the only fighting game I play. Serial, as a fighting game expert, I was wondering, what are your thoughts on the amount of fighters in Smash? Is there such a thing as too many fighters?
I think, in the grand scheme of things, no. I know where the question is coming from. As like, I know that there is a problem in Smash of like there are like 70-something fighters in the, at this point.
And growing.
I think it is, at this point, the largest fighting game roster in a game that isn't, you know, Mugen.
I think MVC2 still beats it out, but probably won't at the next Fighters Pass.
I think eventually Smash will have probably the largest roster of any fighting game. And I think for a lot of competitive players, it can be difficult to say, well, I don't know all of these matchups. But I think there, in the grand scheme of things, I think it is a good thing to have more fighters because, I mean, even on, like, to start on, like, a competitive level, having those rare characters that you see every once in a while can be kind of exciting of, like, oh, you don't get to see, you know, for example, Duck Hunt much. But there was one person at Evo this year who got to top 8 with Duck Hunt, and that was really exciting for the scene because it shows, like, hey, there's this whole other cast of characters. And for a lot of competitive players, like, you learn to play against the ones, the biggest threats, right? Like, everyone knows how to play against Joker because Joker was seen for a long time as the best character in that game.
Right. One Evo.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, though it on a, like, if you're a casual player, just let the competitive people sort that out and say, like, hey, here are the characters that you need to focus on. Here are the characters you need to learn. And I get the idea that learning every character can be difficult if you're trying to, like, play at a high level. But I think for a lot of people, having those characters is sort of, like, it makes it easier to buy in and can grow the scene of like, hey, I, like, Duck Hunt is a character I come back to because I love Duck Hunt as a character. Like, I wasn't a big Duck Hunt fan, like, of the game, but I like that he's in it. And I stuck around with Smash 4 and Ultimate more because he was in it, even though he's not, like a standard character. So I think that there are problems with having a larger roster, but I think they are worth it overall because it expands the scope of the game in a way that makes it more interesting, in that, you know, maybe years from now we have a completely different set of characters who are dominating the meta, and that makes it more interesting. Versus like something like Melee, who I mean, they're not patching it, which is another issue, which is like why that game has the same like five characters in every top eight basically. So I think it is a good problem to have, I think, to have that many characters.
Yeah, as a somewhat casual observer, I like watching fighting games, but I don't ever play competitively. Mm. It is so boring to me when I watch an Evo and it's the same characters over and over again at the top four.
Yeah, I think having too many characters to choose from and to have to compete against, I think, is preferable in a lot of ways than to having the same set, even if that can make it feel more comfortable in the long term of like, okay, if I'm playing Street Fighter 3 Third Strike, I know that I need to fight against Chun-Li. And if I know that matchup, I'm pretty good. And I can like think about a few of the other characters next. So I think it's overall, like I said, it's a good problem to have.
Like the most exciting like Evo top 8 for me ever was that time Alayna was just released. Mm-hmm. Or had just been released the previous year. And like that, who was it who was playing her? They kept like using the
Justin.
Heel?
Might have been Justin.
Might have been Okay. But like it was such an exciting Because he knew how to play her super well. Right.
And that's like, that is 100%, like the flip side of that is that everyone hated Elena because yes. she was such a lame character because she could heal and win matches just based on attrition. But like you said, it's like, as a casual observer, seeing a new character who could do a new thing that was interesting and cool, I think was exciting for a lot of people and made the Spectre side of it, or like which is part of the scene in a lot of ways, right? Because I think spectators contribute as much, if not more at this point, to a scene's growth in terms of monetary value. That can be a good problem to have, for sure.
All right. Lewis asked, how do you go about covering a game conference? For example, yesterday, Nintendo Direct. I chose this because we used to do this differently.
Mm-hmm.
And like now I think this is actually an introspective moment for us.
Yeah. Right now it's like not applicable because I don't do it. But when I was at Game Informer, it was definitely one of those, especially like E3 was like a kind of like a fun crucible in a lot of ways where... Mm-hmm. You would get news in, and we'd have like a person who was scrubbing all the screenshots and the trailers and basically getting assets. We had a number of people covering, like we had like separate Slack channels for live streams, and we would say like, okay, we have like a pit boss, and sometimes it'd be you and Rami, sometimes it would be like another senior editor, and it'd be like, hey, this thing is coming up, we're seeing this trailer, like you go write this up, right? And so we'd have like multiple writers working on stories over the course of like a conference, which made it hectic. But at the time, like once those conferences wrapped up, like we all kind of felt bad, like we crushed it, like we covered all these stories, those things are all up on time, and we felt pretty good about having worked those.
Yeah, it was E3 was an interesting thing because like we would be in coffee shops scattered around LA because mm-hmm. we had not all met up yet, like writing up news. I remember the specific time where like we were covering the Ubisoft conference, and I plugged my laptop in and I was like writing stuff up, and I realized, oh, I'm out of battery. So I had to write up, like, I'm out of the mix right now. Like, my laptop's about to die. I need to find anything. Then JP messages me and says, oh, yeah, we were there yesterday, and Kyle Hilliard broke the outlet. Do you remember that?
I do, actually. Yeah. He did break the outlet.
So, like, apparently I just happened to get the terrible luck of sitting in the same booth you guys did, and you guys had fucking broken the thing. That
I didn't do it. Kyle did it.
Yeah, okay.
To be clear.
Kyle Hilliard broke it, which you can find him on Twitch at twitch.tv/Kyle Impersonator. Yeah.
Every morning at 11 Central, which is like 9 a.m. Pacific.
He's doing a really good Let's Play of Metal Gear Solid Ghost.
Yeah, I've watched it. It's fun. Yeah,
it's a fantastic game. Let's see. Time for Squad Up. Alec Bobko with PSN ALBOB875, ALBOB875. He said, I'm looking to add more KFBFs to my friends list and hopefully squad up with the people for Borderlands 3, which comes out super soon, actually. I game mostly in the evenings and weekends, and I'm in Eastern time. So you guys want to play Borderlands 3 with somebody? You're looking for... And play that game co-op. Don't play Borderlands single player. What are you doing? Play it with somebody. Talking to Alec Bobko. All right, let's head up to You're Wrong. Let's see what we've gotten wrong. Apparently, I missed a deal of the day. Baba Is You was $11.99 on Steam today. Baba Is You is a fantastic puzzle game that will make you feel super dumb. You will love it and you will hate it. And it's like, that game came out the same time as Sekiro. And I had never felt dumber and worse at video games.
Yeah, between Sekiro and Baba Is You, that was definitely the real hardcore gamer hours for a while.
Gamer B was the Elena player. That makes sense. I probably would not have cheered as much for Justin Wong. Just because he's in so many finals, and like I like cheering for underdogs. Tfue is pronounced Tfue.
Tfue? Okay.
Dr. Disrespect was not banned. He was suspended.
Okay, fair enough.
That's more or less a temp ban. If you can't log onto your Twitch thing and do streams, like I consider that a ban. Overwatch runs smoothly at 30 FPS, wrote Ferris on Twitter. Outputs of 900p docked to 720p. That's surprising. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Is that it? Did we mention it not running well?
Well, no, I expected it wouldn't run that well.
Okay.
It's pretty cool that it is.
Yeah.
Golden Sun has been represented in Smash Ultimate. Yeah, with a trophy.
That's true.
Not...
I mean, it doesn't have to be Isaac, I guess. You know,
it doesn't have to be, but it should
be. If it's going to be a Golden Sun.
If it's not Isaac, it should be Felix. Yeah. Like, it should be one of those. Jedi Academy is coming out in 2020. Oh, then I wrote the wrong date. Okay. Sorry about that. So, yeah, Jedi Academy is next year. That looks like it. We got surprisingly little wrong.
Yeah, thank you.
Hell yeah. All right. For the rest of the week, later today, JV, Suryo, and I are recording Gamescast. I have not planned this out at all. It's going to be a shit show.
It'll be fun, though. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Yes. We're here mostly to talk. We're going to... If you're a Patreon subscriber, you can watch it live. If you're not, you should be. What are you doing? Like, Watch it. You can listen to it next week, but by that point, everyone's going to be done talking to it.
It's not going to be as cool anymore.
Well, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, but
it's going to be such a beautiful disaster.
Yeah.
You should really watch us.
Yeah. Right, we're going to have a pre-show. Last week, I think the pre-show, Greg and I talked about preview events and named some names we probably shouldn't have. But that's lost to time now, so if you didn't see it live.
You'll never know those names.
I always think of that crust. Oh, is it? It's archived? Oh, shit. Okay.
Those names are still named.
Then no one from Bandai Namco or Ubisoft watch that show.
Okay. All right.
But, like, tomorrow, me and JV are hosting Kind of Funny Games Daily as well. So send in questions for that. Let us know. I think it's probably going to be a more introspective one. But we'll talk about it. We'll see. Until next time. Shake hands.